Good morning, everyone. This is the Administration and Operations Committee of the Annuity and Pension Board of the Employees Retirement System. Today is Thursday, March 17th. It is 9:01 a.m. Can I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Ms. King. Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Quorum?
Okay, our first agenda item is the election of the vice chair. Do we have to go into, we don't have to go into closed session for this, do we?
No.
Oh, it has to be open session, I think.
Yeah, oh, okay. I wasn't sure if this language was for agenda item one. Do I have a nomination for vice chair?
Mr. Klusman, I'll nominate Ms. King.
Do we need a second?
That would be helpful.
She has to ask three more times. Or
yeah, right.
Three times.
Ask if there's any other nominations, right?
Oh, you're right. Yep. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Okay, and I can second the nomination,
yes, of
right?
Of course, yes.
Okay. Okay, I'll second the nomination for Ms. King. With that, all in favor? Vote aye.
Aye.
Congratulations, Ms. King.
Thank you, Tom and H. I appreciate this nomination and confidence. I look forward to serving the board as a vice chair of the committee.
Thank you. Okay, our next agenda item is the Baker Tilly, the financial audit. I believe this one is marked for closed session. So please be advised that the Administration and Operation Committee may vote to convene in closed session on the following items as provided in Section 19.851I, Wisconsin State Statutes, for considering all matters related to acts by businesses under Statute 560.15, which if discussed in public could adversely affect the business, its employees, or former employees. The committee may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Can I have a motion to go into closed session?
Klusman.
Thank you.
A second.
Thank you. And do we need a roll call?
Yes, Ms. King. Ms. King.
Aye.
Mr. Klusman.
Aye.
And Ms. Sawa.
Aye.
Quorum. And if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
Time is 9:04.
Thanks. The recorder's on now. Aicha, if you want to say the time.
Yep, the time is 9:16.
Thank you.
1 second.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yep, they're on now. Just follow the CLA people are back on, so pretty good to go. Just follow. We can go ahead with number three now. CLA people are online now.
Okay. Agenda item, our next agenda item is Kristen Larson Allen, IT Vulnerability Audit Report Presentation. Who's taking that from CLA?
We have to go back.
We have to go back on closed session.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's a different exception under the open meetings law, so that you have to read that.
Oh, did I read the wrong one before? I think I did.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that was weird that one wasn't for closed session. Okay. Please be advised that the Administration and Operations Committee may vote to convene in closed session on the following item 3 as provided in Section 19.851I, Wisconsin State Statutes, for considering all matters related to acts by businesses under 560-15, which if discussed in public could adversely affect the business, its employees, or former employees. The committee may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. Can I have a motion to go into closed session?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Ms. King.
Klossman will second it.
Thank you.
And roll call.
Do we need a roll call?
Yes. Ms.
Yep.
King?
Aye.
Mr. Klossman?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Quorum. And if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder again.
The time is 9:18.
Thank you. Recorder's on now, Aicha.
Okay. It's 9:35.
Thanks.
Okay, so moving on to agenda item 4, Clifton Larson Allen Finance and Accounting Audit Report Presentation for 2021. Clifton Larson, who's going to take that?
This is Ray Emery. I'll kick us off. And then, Terry, if you would put that, I think I was going to talk to the PowerPoint outline that we had, Terry.
There you go.
And if you can go to the second slide, that would be great. So the one thing I wanted to talk about is just that we're at, you know, we've wrapped up the audit plan for 2021. Dan and I have done that, Dan Ludwig. There were two projects that we didn't report out that were still open as of 12/15. We're reporting out on that. On those two, you've heard already on the, I'll say the showcase IT vulnerability assessment. We're going to just take a moment to talk about the other project around accounting and finance. You can see here that will wrap the year up. And then on the agenda, we did want to take a moment and talk about the 22 audit plan. And so if we can go to this slide, the second slide, or slide 3, please. Thank you. And so, as you can see here, we just talked about the network vulnerability assessment. We're talking about accounting and finance. High level, I wanted to highlight a couple things on that project. And Dan Ludwig, you can add some color commentary. But we worked with Dan on this project. We assessed policy, procedures, and controls for about 7 process areas that also included 15 sub-processes. And those sub-processes included things, you know, the typical things you would expect are things around invoice review and approval, account reconciliations, financial statement compilation and review, a myriad of things. The thing that I would highlight here is that the results, we did not have in the substance of the report, we did not have any, find any control deficiencies. And we did conclude that the maturity level is what we would call well-defined. You all have heard that definition before, but I would like to play back what that definition is for your benefit. But a defined maturity level is an example of you have policies and processes that are established. They're reviewed on a regular basis, updated as needed. And then it includes a number of controls, preventative controls that prevent bad things from happening, and detective controls. Obviously, you know, after there's a failure, it'll identify, issues. A defined level of maturity is considered suitable for the finance and accounting area based on, I'll say, benchmarking. And then we had no management recommendations either coming out of this assessment. Mr. Ludwig, anything you would add?
I would just echo a couple things that you just said, Ray. First and foremost, the staff, financial accounting staff at Seamers is a great team. They're experienced. They have they have their processes in place and so forth. It is a well-worn and true path, as Ray described, a defined maturity. But I would also echo that the fact that they are not entrenched in with a singular mindset. They're cognizant of what's going on around them, so that if something changes, they're flexible enough to pick that up and adaptive enough to react to the situation. They know, you know, they have everything in place, essentially. So you have a very good team. Ray is absolutely correct. We had no findings and so forth. It's a well-worn, it's a well-oiled team, and you should be very happy with that group.
And then I'll close on this slide that, you know, as you can see the hours there, we're just at, you know, just slightly under budget. So on, you know, on time, on budget to live for delivery this year. The estimated hours and cost this year, roughly $105,000. That's going to be with the same range of hours and dollars for 22, which we'll talk about in a moment. And I would say, and all that to say, the three-year agreement we have with ERS, we're right in line with, executing according to that. Questions before I leave this slide? And then maybe the last slide is the 22 audit plan. Again, you can see it's roughly about $105,000, similar hours to 22. The 23 plan will be a similar set of hours and dollars. And as you all may recall, we did develop the 22 audit plan based on the risk assessment that was done earlier this year, in 21, I should say. As the first project that we conducted. And the thing that I would highlight, I'll highlight a couple things, you know, the benefit payroll process audit, that is a recurring audit project that has that's historically been performed for ERS. It's an important project, and we'll have, you know, the scope is, we don't anticipate any change in the scope of work from what's been done in the past. And I thought it would be good that when we talk about the other projects, so there's a theme obviously around IT and cybersecurity. Relative to this plan, I was going to have David just talk, give a high level overview and color commentary on some of these projects, and more, you know, around the risks that these assessments are trying to, get at. So maybe, David, if you're available, if you can just share your thoughts on some of these other projects.
Yeah, thank you, Ray. As IT and cybersecurity risks continue to evolve and the impact to organizations continue to increase as we see cyber threats impacting other organizations around the world. So we're wanting to make sure we dig into those IT processes and those IT systems to make sure that we identify any gaps or any potential vulnerabilities so that they can be addressed and controls can be implemented. So, you know, things like business continuity and disaster recovery, whether it be something, you know, inadvertent from, you know, server crashing to much more damaging, such as a potential ransomware attack, making sure that controls and processes are in place to be able to manage those types of larger events that can disrupt business operations, and making sure that you have, you know, processes in place to continue performing business operations while systems are down, and then a plan to recover those systems within appropriate timelines that are accepted by those business owners. We're going to also redo that internal assessment again to continue to find new vulnerabilities and threats on internal systems. Something new this next year, on the external side, last time we just did a vulnerability scan. This time we're going to do what we call a full penetration test. So we're going to do more than just using automated tools. We're actually going to get some of our professionals trying to manually look for vulnerabilities on your perimeter systems and trying to hack in from the outside. And this will include social engineering in the form of email phishing. And so as you're probably well aware, social engineering and email phishing is one of the number one ways that fraudsters get unauthorized access to systems. So we're going to perform an exercise where we see, you know, how susceptible are some of these staff or employees to falling victim to that, and what could a fraudster do if employees do fall victim to that. So we're really going to dig into those types of risks. Any questions?
David,
Yes.
Dave, I was just going to add some comment on the business continuity and disaster recovery. Is it fair to say if you're good and you have good segmentation within your network that if you do get a ransomware attack, that's a good defensive place to be with good disaster backup and recovery? Is that an accurate point?
Yeah, so internal network segmentation is a great control that can really slow an attacker down. With business continuity disaster recovery, we want to make sure that those processes are in place so that when IT systems are not functioning, that people can still conduct business operations. There's those manual workarounds that can be utilized. They may be slower, but they can still function. And then those recovery time and recovery point objectives, those are IT terms, basically, how long can different departments function without those systems, and making sure that the IT processes, the business continuity and disaster recovery plan is designed to meet those recovery objectives so that, if a department can function for a week of downtime, that within a week systems are back online and data is recovered.
Well, thanks, David. Any questions for David on that?
Any questions?
This is Molly. May I ask questions?
Yeah, go ahead.
I just noticed the projection for 2022 audit plan is approximately 620 hour compared to 2022 is 620 compared to 2021, which was projected 685 hours. Current actual hours 552. What is part of the reduction in the hours? Is it because of efficiencies and now we have to do less audits in 2022 as we did in more robust, or not necessarily less robust, but less to the level we did in 2021? Is that what it is, or what is the difference in these hours? Just curious.
Yeah, I'll try to tackle that one. The slight difference is that, one, that's, to do the work, it is less hours that with the scope of the projects that are laid out here. You can tell there's probably a rate that's a bit higher, but that's because the talent that we have to bring to bear on these projects, the IT talent, is at a higher rate. So that's the difference. If that answers your question.
It did. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Well, Aicha, hearing none, this concludes all of our reporting.
And then did anyone have any questions on the actual audit report, the accounting report? Okay, I think we're good.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you, everybody.
Thank
you. Have a great
day. Too. Okay, moving on to agenda item 5, approval of contract amendment with United Mailing Services Incorporated. Jerry, are you taking that?
Yes. We've got counsel with us too. Mary, are you on the line?
Yes. Go ahead, stop. Mary,
are you on the line? Also, do we have...
Yes, I am.
Andy is with us today as well?
Yes. Yes, Andrew appears to be here.
Right, Andrew, do you have any comments you want to make on the contract? I know that you reviewed it. Mary, you as well.
Andrew, you're muted if you're saying anything.
Sorry about that. I'm unmuted now.
Okay, thank you. So go ahead, Andrea. Are there anything you wanted to note for the committee members about this?
No, there's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing that unique about this contract amendment. All it does is extend a service that, as I understand, has been going quite well. I believe Mary said that you did go out for an RFQ and verified that the price is competitive. And we haven't changed anything about the contract other than to extend the terms and increase the not to exceed amount to include the additional years. Right. Right. But I'm happy to answer any questions.
And for the benefit of the committee members, UMS was approved as the vendor the last time, last meeting, and this is the follow-up contract to document that renewing that relationship. So I guess I should call for a motion if there's no questions or comments or concerns about the renewal. I should mention UMS is the mail service firm that the city has also used for a long time. It's a small market, and there aren't really, it's actually a declining industry because of so much electronic communication these days, increasingly. Go ahead.
Well, speaking of electronic communication, is that something that's, increasing more, or is that, I don't know. Is that something
that... The answer to that is yes. I mean, we do have, for example, we do have direct deposit for our monthly pension roll. But we still send out receipts, voucher acknowledgments, and some of that it has to be mailed. So there is a sort of a residual paper aspect to our processes. But we are, of course, for many years now, been using direct deposit, and we have fewer and fewer people that require paychecks. But these but these voucher receipts are, actually not the correct term probably, but advices that that go to trust, the members continue to require paper every month. And we do newsletters also electronically, but there are people that might get them a hard copy. And so it's sort of a long-term migration to electronic. Someday we'll all wake up and it'll all be electronic. And Jeff tells me we'll have chips in our head at that point, probably right there.
Very possible.
So,
okay. Does anyone have any questions, or anyone want to make the motion for approval?
Clusman, I got a question.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to make any more work for anybody, so maybe this. I just noticed a little difference being the one, I guess, retiree in the room. Speaking from experience, everything else I deal with has like an option, a paperless option where you can opt out of mailings, and they kind of, most of these companies now are highly aggressive to push you in that direction to obviously save them money. But are we going to move anywhere to that where we can start to go paperless? Because the thing I'm, again, I don't want to make work for other people, but with these RFPs coming in with just this one vendor, if something happens to this company, we're really going to be, stuck holding the bag here. So maybe we should start moving away from this. And I know we require retirees to have direct deposit. Can we start to require them to go paperless? And then lastly, and I know that still leaves some questions for elections and things like that and other mailings, but you do send out an electronic newsletter. I get that monthly, which is nice. So the paper one becomes kind of redundant. But the last question is, when I have a credit card statement or something and I get the statement, and the same thing was when all you active duty people in the city, you can go on your PSID self-service and you get a copy of your check stub. The check stub that is mailed to us retirees, you cannot get anywhere else. When you log into our system, it's a different format. It's more of just numbers. You can't retrieve that form anywhere that I'm aware of. So are we looking at these couple things where we start to move people paperless and at least reduce the amount of mailing and maybe at some point mandate them? So if this guy would ever get out of the business or retire or do something else?
Well, it's a good point, Tom, and I think the answer to that is yes. As I mentioned, there are some residual requirements. You still have to do, tax reporting on paper, but generally the answer to your question is yes. We'd like to move more in the direction of paperless. In fact, there's a lot of folks who would lobby for a totally paperless process for retirement. However, the lawyers have balked at, they want us to get hard copy documents when we retire people because of the risk of fraud, of course. But things like newsletters and 1099-Rs, we still have to do paper for now. But yeah, we can see what, it is a separate process to try to get people, to wean people off of paper. One of the problems we have is we don't have everybody's email address. Not everyone's provided us with an email address, so it's difficult to send them an email saying, if you want to opt out, please check the box. It's not a requirement, they don't have to do it. Not everybody has necessarily an email. So slowly but surely we're trying to find ways that we can to go paper. I mean, we could just take the position that we're just not going to send out paper newsletters anymore. Maybe we should consider that. That would, help. We could put that in the newsletter and say, send us your email address because we're no longer going to send out the paper. And give people multiple notices. Maybe that's the way to approach it. But I think your point is well taken, and we should move in that direction.
Okay. The only suggestion I would make to help us is that I know right now, if you would offer me a paperless option, I would decline it because I cannot get that. There's information on the mail stub that's not in that system. When you log into the CMERS.
Yes, and I think portal, I heard that loud and clear. I think that's something you can take a look at.
Yeah, if you could somehow get that paper form in the system, then I would quickly opt to it. So I guess, other retirees would probably do the same and help us in that way.
I see Jeff making a note of that right now. Thank you, Jeff. Terry, do you have a comment on that?
We actually put that this idea in one of our strategic IT strategic plans as well for the member self-service to put stubs, actual paper stubs, like you see the 1099s when you log in, to actually see these as well. So that would help in this endeavor as well.
So that should be one of our goals, is to try to get as paperless as we can. Very good, thank you.
Any other questions related to this item?
Ms. King.
Go ahead.
In line with Mr. Clinton's question, he hit it a little bit on the, the sole contract we have at UMS. When Mr. Joshua Benson were interim, or you, Aisha, he had asked a question on what were the reasons why and what happened, why we did not get any other bidders to decline, or what was the reasons for the decline or not bidding on our on this contract. And I wasn't sure if that's ever been addressed, and I'm curious to know, again, why not, because I think Ms. Cleveland did hit it. Should this person decided to, this company decide to go belly up or refuse our work, what happens then to us?
Well, there were,
Jerry, I don't remember if that was addressed.
There were other bidders, but they were more expensive. And as I mentioned, this is a small market compared. I mean, there were other potential bidders, I believe, in Chicago and places like that, but they were pricier. And some of the other local, there were one or two other local. Mary?
No, Jerry, you're thinking of our 1099 printer.
Right.
In this case, it was sent out to six local companies, and UMS was the only one to reply. So I did go back to the other vendors, and three of them said it just isn't a good fit, and one said they aren't taking on new business. So, in other words, we are down to this sole vendor. And if we wanted to try to find another vendor, we would have to go outside the local market.
Thanks, Mary.
other questions?
No other question, but I move approval if there's no other question of the contract.
Thank you.
I'll second it, Klausman.
Thank you. Okay, all in favor? No objection, hearing no objections, motion passes. On to agenda item 6, results of the RFQ for disability claims processing services. Who's taking that?
Yes, staff will take that. So in your package, there's a memorandum that Mary wrote to me and to, obviously to all the rest of you as well, about the responses for the RFQ and the disability claims processing that we have currently with Emerald. And I have Mary and Gus on the line. So Mary, why don't you just kind of summarize from your memo what the results were, and Gus can also speak a little bit about the Emerald process if that's necessary, if anybody has an interest in that. So go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, we sent it out to 3 firms and also posted it on the city site and our site. And we only heard back from the 3 we sent them to. One said that they couldn't provide all the services and therefore weren't responding to it. And then the 2 that did respond is MLS and EMRO. But MLS really didn't provide the information requested in the RFQ. So they were non-responsive. But we were able to ascertain a price differential by making some assumptions. And they gave us their rate as an hourly rate as opposed to per claim, which is what we requested and what EMRO provided. But given the hourly rate they provided and the bulk of a claim, it seemed unlikely that they would be able to provide the service for a lower price than EMRO. But they also said that they didn't provide one of the services in the request. So they really didn't work one way or the other. And so that did leave us with EMRO. And Gus can speak to this. They're pleased with their work with EMRO. So therefore, I see no reason not to continue.
Yeah, and Jerry, I would like to add something else for perspective for the committee members. Before the pandemic, 3-4 years ago, I was invited along with the president of EMRO to give a presentation to the NCPERS executive director forum that was held in Chicago on the subject of disability benefits from pension plans. This is a very narrow industry. Private sector plans don't generally have disability benefits. Usually those benefits are provided in the private sector, if at all, by insurance carriers in a group insurance vehicle rather than through a pension plan. It's because of the nature of municipal services and other public services, especially public safety, these disability benefits are important because these are risky jobs. People are on the street facing lots of hazards, and the military is the same way. So disability is usually a feature of benefits are in the pension plan, a feature of government. And of course, government is one of the few kinds of organizations that even has pension funds anymore. So one of the things that surprised me a bit when we gave this presentation is I found out we were state of the art. Nobody else has these kind of services. They're all very much concerned about the level of disability benefits that are being paid out. I read an article in pension investments that in the city of Detroit, 40% of the retirees are disability retirees. So EMRO is a it was a startup, and the president of that company gave his presentation. They're based in Michigan, and the reason he started the company is there was really nobody in this space before. And so we have identified a vendor that is has robust service capabilities, and there really isn't anybody else. I thought that perhaps we should contact some outside, insurance companies, because they do have robust capabilities for administering their insurance contracts for the private sector, but they're not interested in this kind of business. They don't serve public pension plans particularly. So this is a real niche business, and we got high fives all around from that, from the NCPRS group, because everybody thought we were at the leading edge, which I wasn't expecting to find. I would have thought that, the big funds like CalPERS and CalSTRS and New York and Texas, Florida, would have been far ahead of us, but they really haven't addressed this area at all. So I hope that puts that in perspective. Gus, you want to have any comments about the relationship with Emerald?
Sure. Emerald provides the primary two services they provide us that we use on a regular basis are the sorting capabilities that they have, and they also, we require a nurse to do a summary of each case so that it cuts down on the time that we get billed with the medical council doctors.
You want to explain, so, the trustees may not be familiar with, you use the word sorting, what's involved with that process, it has to do with medical records, why don't you tell them a little bit about that?
So on average we get a couple or a few applications for disability a month. And when we get all the medical records from the different medical providers, it can be voluminous. It could be thousands of pages. So we have EMRO sort them in, chronologically. And then at the end of it, they sort out any duplicates, et cetera. And they just make it a very understandable document to make it, when we perfect our file, to give to the medical council. So it's an understandable, it's not a big mess. And then we have, they provide a service of a nurse practitioner that summarizes the case file so that it kind of clues the doctors into what to look for within the file. So there's an efficiency to this that would be difficult to duplicate in staff. It could be done. To answer a prior question, with the mail service, what if EMRO went away all of a sudden? Could we do this in-house? We could, but it would necessitate much more cost, adding staff, particularly a nurse, and it would not be a wonderful situation. So they've been flexible with us in the past. They do have some backup services. Ordinarily, the medical council is very knowledgeable about the medical environment, the provider environment in the city here, or in the southeastern Wisconsin. So when we need to do referrals for independent medical exams, we usually rely on the medical council for that, but EMRO does provide that service as well as a backup, and some other relatively minor backup things that we could use them for if we needed to. So I mean, there's good symmetry there. And they've been flexible with us in the past when we've reduced our demands on them. So at least for the foreseeable 3-year future, it seems like this is kind of a no-brainer.
Thank you, Gus.
Are there any other questions or comments? And then, Jerry, do we need to approve anything, or?
Yes, we'd like to go forward with the renewal. Mary, were you going to say something?
Yeah, that's all I was going to say, is that we just want to know that it's okay to proceed with a contract amendment.
Okay, so do we need to make a motion for that?
Please.
Okay, can I have a motion to go forward with the renewal of the EMRO contract?
Klosterman, motion.
Thank you.
I'll second. Ms. King will second.
Thank you. Motion passes. Next agenda item is agenda item 7, the approval of the closeout of the 2021 budget. Dan, are you taking that?
Yeah, I can. So in front of you, you should have a memo that I sent to Jerry, just going over our budget to actual expenses for 2021. For 2021, our total budget was just over $20.6 million. Our total actual expenses were just under $16.3 million. So we had plenty of budget available. Of those $16.3 million of actual expenses, $436,000 of those were non-trust expenses. So those would be some of the costs that aren't related to the pension fund. That would be like life insurance, salaries, retiree health and dental, and other non-trust expenses that we identified. So that leaves total trust expenses for 2021 at $15,841,942. And previously, as part of our intergovernmental agreement, we have reimbursed the city $15.2 million. So that leaves a balance due to the city of $621,841.77. So, anyone has any questions? I'll be more than willing to answer them.
Mr. Klusman?
Go ahead.
Yeah, on the second page, Dan, you have, let's see here, that one. What is indirect salary? What's an indirect, give me an example of an indirect salary.
That would be like vacation time or sick time or any other non-direct expense where, you know, the employee's actually not working. Yeah, exactly.
So when you say total salary, that's the actual total salary because you're just breaking that out, 86.8 and 13.2 for no real reason, because the employees are going to get the total salary regardless. If someone doesn't take a week of vacation for some reason, that's not going to change these numbers, right? They're still going to get paid the same.
Yes. Yep. And we break that out because the way the city calculates like the fringe benefit rates is based on direct salary. So we just need to break out the direct portion of that.
Okay. So the total salary line is the one that all of our staff is being paid.
Yes.
Okay. And then down a little bit, the fringe benefit. I see the projection was 46%, but now it's up to 47% actual.
Yep.
Do we get a breakout of that where we come up with that number?
That's supplied by the comptroller's office. It's usually just given to us in percentage terms.
Okay, and then right below it is city indirect cost, 4.2%. What would that be?
That is we use some of the city's infrastructure. For example, we use their PeopleSoft accounting package and other city services. So I think that's kind of just like a chargeback for us for using city services.
Okay. And then down a little bit with the asterisks, you have indirect non-trust activity.
That is for management oversight, so that when our managers are overseeing the life insurance programs, the retiree health and dental programs.
So that we're charging back to them in a similar fashion as they're charging us their indirect cost?
Yep.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Any other questions?
This is Ms. King, may I?
Go ahead.
Dan, Tom, really good question, by the way. I appreciate those questions. Dan, quick question with regards to the information technology system. We've budgeted $1.5 million and only realized $778,000, with leaving a balance of $700 and change. What replacement or activities was not completed as projected to be completed? And will that be completed in 2022?
I know that we plan to carry over about $275,000 of that money for of the unspent budget to from 21 to 22. Insofar as the actual details, Jeff may know, or Terry would have probably a better idea of it than me, or a better explanation of it.
We had budgeted for a project that we didn't need to do. Yeah, I believe, right, Jeff?
Well, that and then the whole street replacement needs to occur.
So we actually defer some replacement of some of our hardware till 2022. And the other big piece of $221,000 that Dan was talking about is our FileNet replacement. We're actually working through that process right now of what we're gonna use. For the FileNet software we actually use to do our scanning is going non-support in, I think, 2 or 3 years. So we're planning to replace that and get ahead of that rather than have to do it under the gun. So that's been deferred to 2022, and we're getting ready to kick that off as well. So it's a combination of those two things where we'll be deferring some of this into 2022 and 2023.
We should expect some of these costs to be requested in a 2023 budget. What you're saying, Jeff?
Correct. We are. And okay. In 2023, actually, we're starting that process right now. And we're looking at some of the hardware there. Actually, the replacement for FileNet that I just spoke of is going to require us to add some additional hardware. So that will be reflected in the 2023 budget. We're working through those details right now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I just got a comment, Mr. Klossman.
Okay. Go ahead.
Just to scurry this away in our board member heads, when we're talking about the upcoming issue about executive compensation, it, from the looks of this cover page, I know that our director sits in front of the board and presents an annual budget and has to go through our board. And then he has to also sit in front of the city council, and they scrutinize that also. And the actual result of that is we came in $5 million under budget. So I think we have an upcoming battle with the people across the street about compensating people correctly, but it sure looks like there's some excellent management going on here that we're coming in $5 million under budget. So when they say that we have no money for such things, we should remember these instances. That's it.
Thank you for the compliment, Tom. Appreciate that.
Thank you. And then I think we need to approve it, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Can I have a motion to approve the closeout of the 21 budget?
Hang on. Make that motion.
Thank you.
Postman will second.
Thank you. Motion passes. Agenda item 8 is the IT project portfolio.
Jeffrey?
Yes, Jeff Schulberg, Chief Technology Officer. So we've got a slide deck here that we'll put up. This first slide is just a synopsis of the major projects and initiatives we have underway as we speak. You'll note there the first 1, 2, 3, 4 are marked 2021. So those are really cleanup activities that we do on an annual basis. And I'd like to point out that with all my years of service and all the places I've been, this is one of the few organizations that does that on a regular basis. And it's really important to clean up old, stale records in those things that we're doing there. It actually helps our security posture tremendously when those records aren't there anymore and cause a problem in the future and actually expose vulnerabilities. See what else would be of interest there. So the vulnerability assessment will now mark closed. We completed our PC upgrades, so we put new desktops out on the floor here. I think we put 30 desktops out and had got those all configured and swapped out with very little problem. It was kind of nice for the staff. And are there any questions in particular on anything on this slide? All right, so this slide is a synopsis of our 2021 hours spent in IT. So you can see there's a chart on the right and an actual pie chart then on the left. So it's splitting that all up. So it's kind of self-explanatory. We're able to do administration, application is separated out, and then our infrastructure side as well. So each of those have categories around maintenance and audits and security and support and upgrades. So for a grand total of just a little over $20,000 spent last year in calendar 2021. And this is a complimentary slide that puts that all together under a single pie chart. Questions on this? All right, next slide, please. So let's put this statistic up. It's just a running chart of our payroll times and how they adjust. And the bottom line is the trial. So we do a trial first and then the actual itself. So the trial gives us, it actually exposes errors that we might have in the payroll so we can fix them before we actually run it for real. So that's a pretty standard thing that we do. This slide are actually application tickets. So the applications team has these tickets open for 2021 by month. So these are all, they could be upgrades, they could be fixes, they could be errors that have to be fixed. So there were a total of 86 tickets in 2021, and 78 were closed. Similarly, on the infrastructure side, there were a total of 67 tickets open and 68 closed. So these are all the activities, including those cleanup activities you saw on the very first slide. Just some statistics around the number of batch jobs we use. So batch jobs are run on a daily basis. And in 2021, we ran just a hair over 6,300 of them with a very low failure rate, only 10 failed. And then you see the list of all the examples of batch jobs that we run. So we're heavily dependent on running a batch cycle every night. And this is the eye chart for the portfolio. Thank you, Terry. So this is the current project management portfolio. What's currently active and where they sit as far as their green or on time, on budget, comparatively. So the top portion of this, top half of it, is the actual action ones. The ones below is a running total of those that have been finished in the last 12 months. So it's somewhat redundant to the very first slide we saw. And that's the last slide. Any questions on our portfolio this month?
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you for your report. And last agenda item, number 9, organizational and personnel update.
Yes, last but not least, Melanie Johnson, Deputy Director, would like to give us an update on the three positions that are outstanding. Is there, Melanie?
Yep, I'm here. Good morning. Okay, for the first position, the ERS Network Security Administrator position, you may recall that position, we had worked with DER for several months trying to fill the ERS Network Administrator position. Well, recently we had that position, the title change and the salary change because we were unable to fill the ERS Network Administrator position, so we changed it to the Network Security Administrator position. Jeff felt that because of what's going on with security, that we needed to focus a little bit more in that area. And also, we had a difficult time filling the Network Administrator position at that pay range, and so we asked DR to consider the salary adjustment for the network security administrator position, hoping that now we'll be able to recruit at a different pay range, at a little bit higher pay range. Yes. So we're currently working with them to post that position. The next position is the pension.
Can I just make one comment on that? Just for sure. The trustees, I would note that this week, both the CSC, the Civil Service Commission, and the F&amp;P basically approved the reclassification of this position. So it's sort of hot off the presses, and now the recruitment will begin.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And then the next position, the pension investment analyst senior position. We did post that position as of last week, Friday. We had we received 8 applications. So that position will be closing this week. So hopefully we have a good group of candidates in that pool of applications. And the record technician too, we're still working with DER to fill that position. Are there any questions?
I would just like to add, on the last two positions, those are vacant because there were resignations. The investment analyst resignation had to do with the vaccination mandate and also maybe pay. And the fellow was able to get a job on the outside where he didn't have to worry about the vaccination mandate. I think probably working from home online. And then on the record stack, the lady that had that job was having trouble balancing childcare and school courses and that work couldn't really all, it was too much. So we had a couple resignations there. And so now we're trying to fill them.
Any questions related to this? Okay. If not, I think that concludes our meeting for today. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Can you all make that motion?
Thank you.
Plus 1 second.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned at 10:27.